You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for listening. You can be a big part, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Happy St. Patty's Day. Got Jess P.S. working hard on the board and on the line. Harvey K., our favorite Delano Democrat, Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, and a frequent guest on this program. Harvey, welcome. Happy St. Patty's Day, man.
Thank you, and the same to you.
Thank you. Any green beer in your future, or did you already imbibe over the weekend?
I don't mean to be a downer, but, you know, I've been married to the same woman for 52 years, coming up in May.
Wow.
She's British.
Yeah.
So, as a consequence, St. Patty's Day has not been
celebrated, huh? Not a thing.
Not been celebrated.
All right. Well, I'll have an extra one for you tonight, Harvey. Just
please do.
Harvey, love it when you come around, man. A lot of folks are already chiming in and want to hear your opinion. Lots of things to get to today, but I think we got to start really with the quote unquote potential of a constitutional crisis here, Harvey. Professor Emeritus of Democracy, how important are the courts and their orders in a democracy and the fact that they have to be followed, I think, in order for the rule of law to rule? How important are the courts, Harvey?
Look, it's fundamental, and not just in a democracy. I mean, we can argue about whether or not the framers of the Constitution got it right or not, but it has worked for many generations, that idea of checks and balances. And when I say checks and balances, good politics can prevail, okay? Good laws can prevail. But it is the case that we currently have, I mean, this is being nice about it, we currently have a rogue administration that when it came into office, decided it was going to pursue change by way of executive orders, fundamentally just executive orders, first. And second of all, they brought in a corporate billionaire, well, soon to be trillionaire, I expect.
The richest man in the world.
Right. To make decisions about government. Now, that's utterly ridiculous, okay? But here's the thing. They don't seem to care less about the courts. Yeah, for a while they were sort of hedging a bit and they would even reverse something and he would shift gears. But right now with the deportation question, it really does seem to me that they're prepared to go and they're prepared to ignore the courts. Okay. And if you get an executive who's going to ignore the courts, that's clearly a constitutional crisis. I mean, I can't imagine what else would be a constitutional crisis. And what we've seen as well is that Congress has yet to assert its, if you like, its power and authority to address this constitutional crisis. We're there. I mean, I know their lawyers might argue, well, we're not quite there. We're there, okay? Especially when you consider the degree to which people's lives are being affected. I mean, we'll get to that later, I assume. It really is, yes, a constitutional crisis. I mean, you know, here's something else. And I was thinking about this today. On the one hand, Donald Trump is essentially, I mean, he's smart on certain kinds of things, but he's not terribly well educated. And he really doesn't understand. If you said checks and balances, I doubt if he would understand that. But here's the thing. The folks that they brought in as part of their transition team and as their advisors are really too smart for us right now. That is, they're handing over to Trump a whole series of ideas and initiatives to follow up on his promises of these last couple of years. And they're doing it and pointing to things in American history and law which seem to be the kinds of things that would validate Trump's actions. Now, the first time he was president, that's not the case.
Right.
Okay. They didn't have that in spite of the, you know, the attorney general being supposedly so smart and so well educated. The thing is, at least he had some reservations about going all in with Trump. I mean, it was scary at the time, but compared to what we see now, you know, it almost seems like moderate, which it wasn't. Right. But the thing is that they are really, really equipping him, or at least cabinet officers, with a certain kind of constitutional logic or legislative logic. The best example I can give you is they're referring to one of the four Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798.
Right.
To validate the deportation. And, you know, it's the Alien Act. Now, let me say this. The Alien Act has been used in American history. I mean, John Adams' administration. I mean, one of the reasons possibly he didn't get reelected was because of the Alien and Sedition Acts and how they alienated certain leading figures and also working class people of that day. Okay, who, by the way, were not as anti-French as the administration at that time. I won't go into the whole history there. Okay, it's also the case that FDR made use of deportations. It's undeniable, okay? But really, when you're in a state of war, one can more readily understand it. And in fact, are we in a state of war? I don't think we are, though we seem to have been in war ever since the 1960s.
Well, I mean, Congress has to declare war, right? So we're in a state of police, constant, eternal police action, I guess, Harvey.
Yeah. So, you know, and also, you know, one of the other things is you would imagine that after 250 years as of next year, we would have learned something about those kinds of things in the past and the degree to which if we want to be a democracy and if we want to be a democracy guided by the rule of law, there are things you just don't do. Okay. Now, I can also tell you that I've read, you know, some of these stories about, you know, the Syrian or Palestinian fellow at Columbia who's in custody or in jail or in prison, whatever is
in down Louisiana. Yes. He's in detention. But, yeah.
And of course it sounds like if you're going to deport Venezuelan gangs, you know, the majority of Americans, like, oh yeah, just go ahead and do it. Right. But you just don't go ahead and do it in a democracy that's committed to the rule of law. You use the courts as the means by which you prove your case, and then you can proceed if you're found to be correct. I read the one story. I don't know if you reported on that last hour. So they were en route where to El Salvador or somewhere like that. From,
yeah, or farming out the prisons.
And they were told by the court or the judge, get him back, right?
Yes.
And they were as far as the Yucatan and the flight pattern. I hope everyone has a sense of geography. Okay. And they said, oh, what the hell? We'll just let him go on.
Yeah, international waters, Harvey. Yeah, we would have come back, but, you know, too late. So sad.
Ah, God. It's also the case. I don't want to get too far afield, but.
All right. Hey, let me reset here. Hang on. Yeah, one second.
Stop me.
Listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That is Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. We're talking about, you know, the fact that this administration has apparently defied court order. A little bit here from the reporting from Slate. The Trump administration pushed forward into a new phase of the rolling national constitution crisis over the weekend, reportedly defying two different federal court orders imposing limits on its deportation of immigrants without due process. Now, one was this kidney transplant doctor, despite a judge's Friday order halting her removal, they still sent her off. And a second, as we're talking about these 250 Venezuelan migrants that Donald Trump has just said, oh, they're gang members. And again, to your point, Harvey, okay, if they are gang members, we're criminals, we don't want to have criminals, but you don't know that until you go through due process, right? You don't get to dub the criminal. I mean, this is an Animal House with your Delta name, man. You have to be found to be, in my opinion. Now, you know, enacting this law, very rarely used, and when used historically has been bad. Look at the Japanese internment. That's the law we're talking about, right? Trump.
Actually, just to be clear, the Japanese internment did not depend on the Alien Act.
Oh, did? Okay.
The Japanese Americans were citizens. The problem is that there were those who were not. Those who were not could have been rounded up and deported.
Gotcha.
But the Japanese Americans were citizens. in most cases. So it wasn't that. They actually, it was an executive order. And that was one of the worst civil liberties, you know, attacks on civil rights and civil liberties in American history. I mean, FDR was, I think I've said this before, yeah. FDR was a great president, but he made some tragic and terrible mistakes.
And that being certainly one of them. And if I mean, not, and now it yes. looks like, you know, Harvey, even if you are, if you have a green card or if you're married to a U.S. citizen. So it's always thought like if you're married to a U.S. citizen, you kind of get the pass. That's always the kind of way I interpreted the whole immigration thing. Apparently, that's not the case, Harvey. I mean, we got
he had his green card. He had the green card.
Yeah. In Colombia. And we talked in the last segment about this couple from Wisconsin, made the national news over the weekend. Wisconsin Dells guy, you know, working locally at the local factory, you know, meets the girl of his dreams. She's from Peru. They get married. They go on their honeymoon. Well, she comes back. She's not in the system. She applied for everything. She overstayed her visa. And boom, they took her. And then she's out, and this guy's won, and he voted for Donald Trump. So I think there's.
Well, I don't want to make light of it, but yeah. You know, I wish people would pay more attention when they vote.
Yeah, I mean there are for real consequences, and there could be consequences for these actions. Harvey, you only got a couple minutes left in this, but one of our texters brought up, and I think it's a good point. What was it, Andrew Jackson told the Supreme Court basically you'll let them enforce it. So what happens? What do you think? How does this play out? If Donald Trump and the court filings right now, to my understanding, I didn't read them, but from the reporting that I've heard, aren't specifically saying we're not listening to you. What they're saying is, well, you know, we were in international waters. It was a verbal report and the written order didn't come till later and, you know, making all sorts of excuses. Now, apparently Friday they're going to have another hearing yes. on this case. But it's hard for me to wonder, like, where do we go from here? I mean, regardless of how they present it in court, the effect is a non-compliant with the order, Harvey.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, at this point, I'm stumped. I don't know where you go from here, okay? Especially if Congress is unwilling to chastise the president.
Yeah, and they're able, just unwilling. Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. He's sticking around for the whole hour, Harvey. Look forward to having more conversation with you. We've got some callers lining up. We're going to get to them as well as the texters. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Where do we go? To whom do we look for justice? If we have an executive branch that ignores court orders, come back with us, 855-75-CIVIC.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Join us on the lines, on the text stream as well. We're talking about, you know, feeding people, employing farmers, supply food supply chains, you know, the very important things that this administration thinks are just not worth it anymore. Again, referring to an article here at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Trump administration canceled program that paid Wisconsin farmers to grow for food pantries. Just a little bit more on here. I want to put a bow on this. And let me know if you have any thoughts. 855-752-4842. Now, this particular program, which again, the new Trump-appointed USDA deputy administrator said that is no longer effectuates agency priorities. And I will say it again. And again, and again, those priorities. What are the priorities, right? Well, you got to have a stable food supply, right? An increased resiliency of it. You have to feed under-resourced communities and support local farmers. And there's jobs here as well. We're talking about $4 million, 250 farmers, 250 pantries with hundreds of farmers. Now, a little bit more in this. The program was seen as a win-win by those who used it. A win-win. Well, let's get rid of the win-wins, right? That's efficient. The win-win. Visitors to food pantries got fresh, nutritious food, and farmers got a stable source of cash to help meet their bottom line. How is this any different than subsidizing the farmers in any other way? You know what I'm saying? Some of Wisconsin's major food banks, like Feeding Wisconsin and Milwaukee's Hunger Task Force, participated, supplying the fresh food to their own networks of pantries. Jackie Anderson, executive director of Feeding Wisconsin, said in the news release that the elimination of the program was especially disheartening during a time of significantly increased need for food bank services. Now, here's a statistic that just kind of blew my mind. I guess I don't think about it, but here we go. More than 617,000 Wisconsin residents are food insecure, according to Feeding America. 617,000 Wisconsin residents are food insecure. And this administration wants to prevent that, stop them from getting access to the food through this program. The reporting continues. The food pantry at Stepping Stones of Dunn County used the program to provide about 50,000 pounds of food for its clients, said the pantry manager Angie Wolf, including apples, lettuce, corn, radishes, beets, fresh beef, and pork. No Diet Cokes there. Like the statewide hunger statistics, need for its service has increased. The pantry feeds more than 11% of Dane County, which is one of the poorer counties in Wisconsin and largely rural. Just think about this for a minute. 617,000 Wisconsinites are food insecure. This particular pantry in Dunn County feeds more than 11% of their residents. 11%. The benefits of being able to provide its clients with fresh, healthy food was enormous, Wolf said, and being able to pay local farmers for their work was meaningful. If the pantry can afford to continue that going forward, she said, it will be on a much smaller scale. To build the program up and then take it away has been pretty devastating, she said. Yeah, people rely on this. They budget on this, as indicated in the next paragraph here. Besides financial support for farmers, the program also taught them about how to expand to bigger markets. Tenzin Botsford runs Red Door Family Farm in Athens, a small village near Wausau. He used the program to scale up his farm's operation and ensure a steady supply of peppers, tomatoes, cilantro, carrots, and other vegetables to United Way of Marathon County's Hunger Coalition, including culturally important foods for the area's Hmong and Hispanic populations. Uh-oh, that's where they got into trouble, right? When Botsford received word that the program had been canceled, he'd already bought seeds and started to plant. He had already bought the seeds and started to plant. The loss will put a significant dent in his income. Yeah, I'll just willy-nilly pull it. Ah, too bad. So sad. Sucks for you. That's what you get for relying on the government. Well, at least Republican government. Almost 40% of the producers picked to receive funding last year were Black, Indigenous, and other people of color. More than half were new or beginning farmers, and 42% of the farms were woman-owned. Ah, see, that was the problem right there. Not middle-aged white men farmers? Not all that? More than 40% receiving funding last year were Black, Indigenous, and other people of color. More than half were new or beginning farmers, and 42% were women-owned. It was in part aimed at giving historically marginalized groups leg up in the world of agriculture, which remains overwhelmingly white and male. Now, the money for the program was to be used up in June, but advocates were hoping it wouldn't be the end of the road. Responding to the termination, Governor Tony Evers said the Trump administration was turning their backs on America's dairyland and betraying our farmers. Yeah, wait until the retaliatory tariffs come in. Then you'll really know what betraying our farmers is all about. USDA said it can't. USDA has said the program's current contracts can be finished and that it will be canceled after that. It's unconscionable to me to drop the ball that hard for people who are living on such thin margins, the farmer Botsford said. It breaks my heart and it really makes me wonder how much pain is going to end up being caused by trying to do politics this way. Madeline Heim reporting at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And they're going after the food pantries and farmers for $4 million. I mean, how much money do we spend every time Donald Trump goes golfing?
I believe 3 million. I might be misremembering that number. It certainly isn't lower.
And he's golfed multiple times. In fact, the guy works out of the office quite a bit. He's not, you know, he's not at the shop at the crappy White House, man. He's out in Mar-a-Lago a lot, right? I mean, he gets mad at everybody else for working remote. What does he do? So when you put it in those kinds of contexts, like how much Donald Trump, we pay for Donald Trump to do golfing, and we're talking about a program here for 4 million people to keep the food rolling, man. We need the farmers. We need some consistent food supply, and we need to help people that don't have the resources. And what is it about this particular one, other than what I would consider the racial makeup of it, that perhaps, you know, got these Republicans all mad about it, than any other program supporting or subsidizing Wisconsin's or this country's farmers and food supplies? Why this one? Because I don't have the answer for it. Because it no longer effectuates the needs of the program. Thank you very much for that. Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. F around to find out. That's what we got. And they're going to do this for what? $4 million? And maybe this, like some of these other cases, are going to end up being thrown out because, you know, Elon Musk and some of these agencies maybe don't have the authority that they thought they did. We got a lot of court cases rolling in. They're not going well necessarily for this administration. And Congress, you know, just giving up their duties and, hell, let the president do it. We don't know. We love him. Yeah. What a mess we're in, folks. Come back with us. 855-752-4842. We got Trump Jr. and Charlie Kirk in town for Brad Schimmel. Go Susan Crawford. Come back with us. Welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It's a talk line. It's a text line. Usually it works. We're working on it right now, but be patient. We appreciate everyone. Matt Rothschild joining me today. Jess P.S. is on the board, and I'm jazzed as hell to introduce to you our next guest. Her name, Julie Bomar. She's the executive director from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Julie, welcome to the Dom Salvia Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
It is our pleasure. The administration, the federal administration, the Trump administration, making all sorts of changes. And we reported on this quite a bit yesterday. So this is a timely interview. We appreciate you joining us. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is saying that the Trump administration canceled a program that paid Wisconsin farmers to grow food for food pantries. And one of the statistics that stood out to me that I was unaware of and still kind of shocking to me is that more than 617,000 Wisconsin residents are food insecure. 617,000 Wisconsin residents are food insecure. Julie, what's your impression on how this is going to impact not only those 617,000 Wisconsin residents, but the farmers that provide that food to those pantries?
It's going to have devastating effects. The local food purchase assistance program has been in effect for several years now. And, you know, COVID really woke us all up, right, to the problems in the supply chain. Yeah. And how we don't really have access to fresh food. If anything happens, it's a fragile food system. And so there were some monies that were made available at that time. And really what happened is it just helped develop a structure that could provide food insecure people with fresh, nutritious, protein-ridden food that was locally grown by farmers, by their neighbors, and it benefited groups of farmers that don't often benefit from the Farm Bill. And it developed a great infrastructure across the entire state so that smaller farmers could actually participate in the food system in a way that they hadn't before. It's had a hell of an impact. And we're really, really upset that contracts and promises are broken.
Apparently, the USDA Deputy Administrator, Jack Tuckwiller, wrote when they sent a letter canceling this program that this program, quote, no longer effectuates agency priorities. Then I'm wondering,
that's bureaucratic talk for you.
what is the USDA priority then, Julie, if not to assist farmers in at least this kind of way? Because farmers get all sorts of other assistance, right? This isn't the only assistance that we as taxpayers provide to our farmers for our agriculture and our food supply chain and all that. Why is it that this one is being targeted, in your opinion?
Well, I think that it was focused on farmers that don't often meet the stereotypical definition of farmer in the United States. And so big commodity growers may often benefit from subsidy programs, from insurance and benefits like that by way of growing commodities. A lot of the smaller growers, which actually are all across Wisconsin, we have a very diversified agricultural landscape. Many of those farmers do not get to benefit in the same ways. They may be a specialty crop grower, and then you don't get subsidies, from the United States government. You may be growing hay, and you don't get subsidies from the United States government, whereas the big guys, the big boys of it all do. They're at least more eligible for it. So this one really targeted those folks that are often left out in the Farm Bill by helping them get into these food systems, these highways, if you will, that literally can distribute food in smaller, more local quantities and qualities.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That is Julie Bomar, the executive director from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. According to the reporting, Julie, the program, 289 Wisconsin farms participated in the program, providing $4.2 million worth of food to more than 250 pantries and schools. So this impacts everybody, regardless of ideological or political leaning. Julie, I'm assuming you have all sorts of political stripes in your organization. How are folks reacting to this?
Well, it's really been interesting to watch all of the federal actions and how they're impacting folks. We have a big tent organization, lots of different kinds of growers, and we did a survey just a few weeks ago to see how the federal decisions were affecting people, and all different kinds of stories came out. And so it kind of depends on what sector you're in and how you've been directly impacted, but the stories are varied, and almost universally there's been negative impact on our members. There are a few who wrote in that they're hopeful that maybe tariffs and things like that will help them in some way, because they may be a smaller producer and they're hoping that the local folks will have to buy more food from them because the costs are going to go up on imported foods. So, there has been some differences in opinion, but the vast majority of folks that have written in and have showed up at our town halls are saying this negatively impacts them.
Julie, do you have folks, farmers with different political leanings? Do you know any that have expressed little buyer's remorse to you? They voted for Trump, and now, holy smokes, he's taking our programs away. He's taking our subsidies away.
I haven't had anybody just come up and say they had buyer's remorse. I mean, certainly farmers are not a monolith. We all know that, right? There are differences of opinion. They may say, I kind of am waiting to see what happens in this area. I don't like what's happening over here. I think it's an overreach. So I think it's not necessarily an easy yes or no or buyer's remorse or not. But a lot of folks, of course, didn't vote for Trump either. So they didn't go into this with those kinds of expectations.
I drive down 94 between Madison and Milwaukee, and I'm always surprised at these huge Trump signs in the farmers' fields. And I'm just scratching my head, what is it that Trump has given these folks that make them so zealous in favor of him? Do you have any clue on that?
Well, I think we've had four decades, multiple administrations to demonstrate that the Farm Bill doesn't work for all farmers. And so whether you're Democrat or Republican, you probably have a beef with the way that the federal government is managing helping shape the food system. And so, there's a lot of folks that really believe that big ag and big pharma need to go, and they maybe saw a disruptor that could change and help shake those things loose. I think that certainly is an opinion by some. Others may have a lot of trouble with the regulatory control that we see at the state and the federal level as well. So there's a large factor of reasons that people may choose this. I think one thing that I can say that working in the farm community for a long time, that farmers believe contracts should be honored. And so that one's really, they're not being honored.
And one of those contracts is to schools. I mean, fresh food for school lunches. Those are being cut. And, you know, I thought this was a great program so the kids can have something, you know, fresher than tater tots that are deep fried, you know, when the local farmers bring food to the school. And how many schools are going to be impacted by this cut on this program?
Oh, there's 30 just up in my region and the small few county area. It's going to be massive if you look across the state. And we have close to 300 food pantries that are going to be impacted by the termination of the local food purchase assistance program, close to 300 farmers. It is going to have a big impact. I also happen to sit on a board of directors for a local food bank, and they're very concerned about how they're going to be procuring fresh meat, fresh eggs, and, you know, all those high quality things that they were getting from the program. And especially because they were counting on it. Remember, a lot of the farmers are already planting right now in their greenhouses. They agreed to uphold their end of the bargain, and they're put out the work, they put out the money, and now that's going to be cut. That's what's so irritating, I think, to many, is that it's just a matter of integrity.
So that violation of that contract, of that word that the government gave them, is so galling to them right now, on top of the fact that they're going to have an economic negative impact too.
Absolutely.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That is Julie Bomar, Executive Director from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Matt Rothschild joining us today as well. Some of the reporting continuing on this, this Stepping Stones of Dunn County, they use this program to provide 50,000 pounds of food to its clients. And apparently, this pantry feeds more than 11% of Dunn County. Now, I know some of these counties don't have a lot of people, but 11% is a lot of people. That's a big percentage of the population. I don't care how many people are in that county, Julie. And this is all to save, if I'm understanding the math here, is this like a $4-some million program? Is that's what's being cut here?
Yeah, exactly. And it was really run efficiently. How much more efficient can you get than shipping locally, right? And the money stays in the economy. It's not going out to Walmart and then to Arkansas. I mean, this is like literally an economic booster for rural economies as well. So it was run effectively. And I lived in Dunn County for 30 some years. I remember talking to physicians. I did a lot of research on rural poverty in a previous career. There are people who are malnourished, not just like they cannot leave their community to go in to these food pantries. So these pop-up pantries and things that they have in rural Wisconsin are critical for people who cannot afford to even drive into town. And so it is incredibly serious. And I think, you know, most people, regardless of their political affiliation, agree that we should try to keep things efficient and local and do the best that we can for those folks that are literally, malnourished.
Well, and I think it was just brought up, and I want to reiterate it again. This is fresh farm food. You know, these aren't bags of chips. These aren't, you know, processed by big food manufacturing. This is money that's being circulated through the local economy more than once, right? We heard people about that are hiring some part-time help to help, you know, to help them in these endeavors. Well, that also, you know, it creates employment. It creates food security. It creates a secure food supply lines. As you mentioned before, COVID really exposed a lot of these concerns. So as an investment on the dollar, it's hard to think of another program that would have the impact that this program, and it's I hate to say $4 million is not a big program, but it's really not, especially when you consider some of the monies that, I don't know, the president of the United States spends when he goes in Air Force One to go golfing, I believe, at about $3.5 million per when he's got to pull out the plane. You know, these efforts are being done, Julie, to effectuate a justification for trillions of dollars in tax cuts. And people can have an opinion whether or not they think that's righteous or just. Are your members and the people in your communities, do they recognize that this is the impetus for all of this? That's why we're doing this, is to justify and pay for tax cuts.
I think that there more work needs to be done on connecting the dots there for sure, Dom. I think that a lot of folks were excited, you know, maybe about more efficient government or wasteful programs being targeted, and they maybe didn't sign up for the kinds of cuts that we're seeing, and they weren't sure where they were going to be targeted. But rural America is going to be hit particularly lopsidedly in all of this. And, you know, we're, people, I think, are starting to put it together.
Do you have a moment to come around on the next segment as well? I want to ask about tariffs and what you saw as the impact currently and perhaps what was done in the past. But while we have just this one segment, appreciate your time. The local politicians in these areas, has there been any discussions? Have they shown up at any of the meetings? Have they, you know, provided any insight, right, left, regardless of their political leanings? Are they involved in the community? And what are their thoughts? Have you heard anything?
We've heard a lot from local elected officials. We did have a town hall that we sponsored a few weeks ago. We offered it open to representatives. We're a nonpartisan organization. We invite everybody. And the only folks to show up were on the Democratic side of the aisle. Although I have seen, signs that GOP representatives are visiting food pantries and food banks. So that's good to see. But we were disappointed that they didn't show up.
Folks are listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Come back with us. Julie Bomar, Executive Director from Wisconsin Farmers Union. Matt Rothschild as well. Jess P.S. working on the board. I want to get into some of the tariff conversations and what you're hearing on the current situation. Plus, I want to get your feedback on how it went the last time Donald Trump started a trade war and how he paid the farmers. Come back with us. 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
We all running in the same race. Ain't nobody winning. We only here for a minute. Yeah. So everybody slow down.
Life is beautiful. Let's all take a moment now. Let's just try to breathe it in.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. It is our last segment of the day. And what as we like to do, we like to talk about something good, something happy. Put a smile on your face. Wrap the show up with a cherry on top. It's all Jess's idea. It's her world. I'm just living in it. Thank you, Jess. It's always a lot of fun. And you can join us. We'll get to you 855-752-4842-855-75-CIVIC. We got a texter in here. Let's see. Andrew from Maine said, the wife made it to 50 years old today. Wow, the big
50.
Oh, you kids are so cute. And she's feeling slightly better while battling the flu.
Oof.
Oh, that's got to be tough. Hey, happy birthday. You're 50, man. Well, I'm glad she's feeling better. Happy birthday to Mrs. Andrew from Maine. We appreciate you playing with us. 855-752-4842. Matt, I think we do some poetry is a big thing we like to do. It makes you happy. Tell us about what you're thinking about today, man.
Well, a friend of mine, thank you, Betsy, gave me a book by Margaret Atwood, famous for Handmaid's Tale. But she, Margaret Atwood's been a poet for 62 years, and the new book is called Paper Boat, New and Selected Poems, 1961 to 2023.
Wow.
So I'm really enjoying reading that. And I thought we'd offer a poem by Margaret Atwood for our listening audience. So here's a poem called Night Poem. It's a parenting poem and a Northwoods poem.
All right.
So here's Margaret Atwood in her own voice.
Night Poem. There is nothing to be afraid of. It is only the wind changing to the east. It is only your father, the thunder, your mother, the rain. In this country of water, with its beige moon damp as a mushroom, its drowned stumps and long birds that swim, where the moss grows on all sides of the trees, and your shadow is not your shadow, but your reflection. Your true parents disappear when the curtain covers your door. We are the others, the ones from under the lake, who stand silently beside your bed with our heads of darkness. We have come to cover you with red wool, with our tears and distant whispers. You rock in the rain's arms, the chilly arc of your sleep, While we wait your night, father and mother, with our cold hands and dead flashlight, knowing we are only the wavering shadows thrown by one candle in this echo you will hear 20 years later.
Mm. Well, I love that Margaret Atwood poem, night poem.
Damn.
You hear echoes from your parents not only 20 years on, but right. 60 years
on. As long as you're alive, you will hear those echoes. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate that. Jess, you got anything you want to throw out there, Jess?
Yeah. I know that not everyone loves this weather, but when it's storming out, I am at my happiest. I love storms. I love the sound of the thunder. I love the sound of the rain. And just having a little bit of time today to be able to watch that, that was something really good for me.
And we've had some hell of a storms rolling through here in Wisconsin. You know, when I was a kid growing up, we lived out on top of a hill in Stevensville, Wisconsin, and we had a deck facing the south. And when storms would come in, we had a great view of this thing rolling in. And I saw a meme recently about, like, hey, here's Midwesterners when a storm rolls in, and here's everybody else. Like, everyone else is in the basement with their candle and their light.
We're grabbing a cup of tea.
Right. Their radio, their battery powered radio, you know, all being safe. And the rest of us were on the deck going, man, that's a big tornado.
Would you look at that
one? Look at that one. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC, the original Claire, the OC. What's up, Claire? Tell us something good.
Hey, Dom. I've got part two of a silly joke for you.
All right.
Okay, what do you call a guy with no shovel in his head?
Not Doug?
Douglas.
He's Douglas. You're so close, Jess. Thank you, Claire. Appreciate the puns as always. Let's see. What's something good? So what is today? Today's hump day, Wednesday. Yeah. I just firmed up with my siblings. Going to go visit mom this weekend. You know, Ma's in the memory care. She got some white matter disease. Not doing great. But she's still got a good sense of humor. And when she's awake and active and at it, we have a great time. And so my sister was visiting recently, and she didn't want to get out of bed that day, and she didn't really eat a whole lot, but she had lots of juice. And before she went to her nap, my sister said, hey, you know, we're all coming up on Saturdays. Anything you want? She's like, Ma, thought for a moment. She said, I want donuts.
No, right.
I'm like, hey,
all right, Ma.
Ma, that's what I'm talking about. I want donuts too.
Yeah.
We used to get donuts when we were a kid, man. My dad would go out to the local store, and we'd get these big apple fritters, man. I mean, yeah. When you're small, this thing's as big as your head. I couldn't believe that this was a donut and this was a thing. And I, to this day, love apple fritters.
Oh,
so
me too.
I'm gonna go have an apple fritter with mom this weekend. Hey, folks, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for playing along. Thank you to Julie Bomar, the executive director from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. There is more reporting on this. Perhaps we'll get to this tomorrow. Political has a piece out talking about the extent of the money that is being cut from these programs. And we didn't get to the angry Democrats, but, you know, I'm one of those today. We'll get to that perhaps next week. Thank you, Matt Rothschild, for joining me on Wednesdays. Thank you, Jess P.S., for all the hard work that you do. And folks, stick around. Pete Schwab of the Nightlight is coming up next. Have a great evening. Drive safe out there. We had a texter say something good. The rain stopped. It's snowing now. So be careful out there in Madison. Folks, have a great night. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.